I call the meeting of the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors to order. We will begin with the Pledge of Allegiance, followed by a moment of silence.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. Now, make sure there's nothing written on here. Now we will begin, adopt the agenda for the meeting. Are there any recommended changes or other updates?
Are you going to, when you present, are you going to put anything about dog barking on
your... Yes, ma'am.
Okay, then I would like to talk, just another complaint that I got under. Is that unfinished business?
Unfinished.
Yeah, yeah. It's brief.
Okay. All righty, that'll go under unfinished business. Okay, are there any other changes?
No.
Okay, without any objection, we'll now, the agenda is adopted. Mm-hmm. All right, County Administrator.
So just a few quick things. I think there's a birthday on Friday. I'm not sure exactly who it is, but somebody up there has a birthday on Friday. Happy birthday, Mrs. Eager.
I was going to say, I'm looking at the smile on her face.
This is a nice card.
Don't you want to forget about those things?
You didn't know we were signing a card.
The Ferrari. Did she sign her own card?
No.
No.
I don't think she did.
I hope not.
No, I didn't.
Anyway, happy birthday in advance.
Thank you.
Just a note, that the Pride in Public Service Awards, that the program that you all approved last year, has been in effect now for over the last year. We've been getting nominations and recognitions for all different kinds of things for staff, from citizens and from staff members and from board members. And the first recipients this year have been selected by the Tiger Team, and the recipient of the Pride in Public Service Award for this year is Deputy Patrick Wood from the Sheriff's Office. Deputy Wood will get a $500 cash award and the certificate. And those will be presented at the annual employee picnic, and I'll tell you about that in a minute. And then the other nominees that will receive a $250 cash award will be Cheryl Elliott from Emergency Services, Deputy Thornton from the Sheriff's Office, Mr. Moldova and Mr. Vaughn from Building Inspections. They'll split a $250 award. Ms. Payne from Parks and Rec and Mr. Shaw from Public Works. And those were selected by, there's I guess 12 or 13 members of the Tiger Team that met to consider the nominations for the year and then present those awards. So we'll get those certificates ready for the board signature, and then they'll be presented at the annual employee recognition dinner, which is scheduled for Thursday, October 6th. We'll get the information out for your calendars. It's going to be at Cunningham Creek Winery this year. They've got a very big building and an outside area and lots of parking. The event is from 4 to 6 on October 6th, Thursday, October 6th, and it's for families as well. Just need to get names and numbers in advance from everyone. Dinner will be between 4:30 and 5:30, and we'll start the award ceremony and presentations at 5 o'clock. Now, that'll include the Pride in Public Service Awards that I just showed you, and then also the Longevity and Service Awards for about 20 other staff members as well. So we'll get that out to you for your calendars. But Thursday, October 6th at 4 p.m., at Cunningham Creek Winery. And then we also got a recognition letter from Congressman Hurt. This is in recognition for Fluvanna County and our libraries hosting the local office hours for Congressman Hurt during his three terms in office. And this letter is now framed and posted over at the library for the citizens to see. Willow Hill Farms is our spotlight on business this week. They are kind of an organic farm here in Fluvanna County. And they also participate with a CSA seasonal membership. With a CSA membership, you can sign up and share in a membership for that, and then you get boxes of vegetables and meat cuts of choice and flowers each week through the growing season. And it's a good way to participate in local farms and also get the types of things that you're interested in, like kind of like a wine club where you get two bottles a month through your wine in a month club or things like that. So this is for some really good locally grown produce and meats and flowers, and they're a great family that's got this farm that's been going for a few years down here in the county and doing well. And then Mrs. Booker, you had mentioned, I'm going to come back to this, I'll come back to the barking. The Economic Development Roundtable was held on the 19th, was held last week on Wednesday, the 31st. And what we'd like to do is do a work session at your October 19th meeting after we flesh some of these tasks out that came out of that roundtable. We'll get some information to the board for your work session on October 19th on these types of topics. And these are the kinds of things that we identified at that meeting on areas and issues we want to look at and get some ordinances updated, get some policies in place to support the Zion Crossroads water and sewer system and economic development throughout the county, but specifically targeted at Zion Crossroads and in Fort Union District. And let's see, the elected officials breakfast is still scheduled for the 20th, next 2 weeks from yesterday at 8:30 a.m. in the library. We've got representatives coming from most of the local offices, and then we've got a number of people that are all the local elected officials, board of supervisors, school board, constitutional officers, and the soil and ag elected officials have all been invited. And a number of them are certainly planning on coming already. We've gotten confirmation on. But Mr. Smith will get with you to get agenda items and any discussion topics you may want to have so we can have a list in advance to send to the congressional and state and senatorial offices to let them know the kinds of things we want to touch on during that breakfast. And so he'll be getting with you over the next few days to collect that, try to get it to the legislators' offices by the end of next week. And I'll be gone tomorrow, on Friday, and then next week, and Mr. Dahl will be acting in my stead. Let's go back to the barking dog. We've had, over the last several years, we've had a number of concerns from citizens about barking dogs, leash laws, what can we do through our county. This is the latest one. A lady submitted, I think, some emails to both staff but also to the Board of Supervisors, and I just want to know what the board wants me to do. Do you want us to investigate again, putting greater restrictions in place in subdivision, dense subdivision areas, and leave the rural preservation, rural areas alone, or leave it as it is, or what? Every 3 months or so, or 6 months, 2-3 times a year, we get a specific complaint from someone where the neighbor's dog is barking for 6 hours in a row, and it's clearly an annoyance. But you all have to set the rules on what you want. The sheriff's office, I think, when we investigated the first time a couple of years ago, wasn't particularly in favor of having more restrictive laws, because then you actually have to enforce them. But
what is their only recourse besides us?
Civil.
Yeah, we've discussed that before.
Yes, we have.
But I thought we left open or consider the subdivisions, more dense population, that we could put some restrictions there. I don't know if you can't restrict how many dogs people have.
Yes, you can.
Uh-huh.
Chesterfield County, I know, does that.
Oh, okay, because, I put that on the property stock line, and now you want me to wait until I'm finished, Jay. I mean, you want me to wait to the end to talk, or right now, since we're on barking dogs?
Since he opened up that can of worms.
Can I, and it won't be?
No, ma'am.
Okay.
Are we okay with that?
Sure.
I just had a concern from a neighbor who said that her neighbor has at least 15 to 20 dogs, and then across the street there are another bunch. So when one starts barking, they bark most of the time, because I think they're penned up most of the time. And she just felt that she had been there for 20 some years, and she couldn't really enjoy her property and sit out on the porch. If she goes walking, that stirs them up. I've been in there twice. I've driven in there twice, and I haven't put the windows down. I haven't heard them. That's being, she's not the only one
right.
That's concerned. Other people are just not coming forth. And it's real touchy, because you have a neighbor that you've had a neighbor for years, and all of a sudden there's some tension about that, and you don't know exactly how far to go.
Do they have a permit for those 15 or 20 dogs?
I have no idea.
I think that would need to be checked to begin with, just to check to see if they have that right.
Right. They do.
They have it, but is it registered with the county and all that?
But they need them. They either need to have them all individually licensed, or they need to have a kennel license.
Yes, there you go.
But that's not a regulatory thing. Mm-hmm. That's a revenue measure, really.
Right.
Okay.
Now it would help with making sure that they're all vaccinated and things like that.
I think that would be a good place to start. Let them go in. At least you don't know they're on notice.
You don't have to do anything for that.
Yeah.
That's already the law.
No, right. We just contact the sheriff's office and animal control can check and see.
Yeah. We've received a complaint.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's a good start.
Yeah, and the area you're talking about, is that a densely populated subdivision?
Stagecoach. Up on 53.
Right before you, between the high school and the apple orchard.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's
there are a lot of families.
They're not tiny lots, right. But there are a lot of houses in that area. Mm-hmm. So, what I've done so far in the past, whenever we've gotten these complaints, is I've forwarded them to the sheriff's office to animal control. But this one, again, specifically asked about can we change the ordinances. So no change.
No change. I'd go ahead and do what we said.
Right.
Yes. But then we have these other concerns. We'd like to see similar laws in neighborhoods like Sycamore.
Well, as far as the license, every time you take a dog and they get a rabies shot, the veterinarian has to contact us, the county. So unless there's a dog that's not vaccinated, we would already know.
Yeah, it's very likely that they have a license. I mean, it's only $8 per dog.
No, I don't even think it's that much.
I think it's about $8.
Not much.
Yeah. And so even with 15 dogs, I mean, it's not a huge amount, but it's...
But that doesn't solve the problem in the neighborhood.
No, the barking is...
But 12 of them are that big.
Irrespective of their license status and their rabies vaccination status, mm-hmm. barking is a whole other issue. But there is no... I don't know of any other than civil action.
Well, it would be a civil action. But if it's in a subdivision, the first question is there any restriction in the subdivision?
The homeowner...
Well, wouldn't be an HOA for one that age, okay. but there are frequently limits on what animals you can keep, and I don't know whether it's true in this case or not, but that would be the first place I'd look. And then after that, a barking dog can be a private nuisance.
Mm-hmm.
Does Sycamore Square, can we find out if Sycamore Square has covenants and restrictions to what they are?
They want to see similar exceptions that we have at the lake.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see why he wouldn't be at Sycamore Square if it's at the lake.
Well,
the
lake has a owner's association that has specific
true.
Rules and things.
Yeah, that's
I
true.
Don't know that Sycamore Square does.
Yeah, I don't know.
Any planning folks here? Jason, do you know Sycamore Square has an HOA or a...
Okay.
Well, they can check and see what their covenants are. But
okay.
I've read their covenants, but I don't remember.
Yeah. And again, that's really, if someone lives in that subdivision, that's kind of their responsibility to go to their HOA and look at those types of covenants. But we'll take a look and see.
But
this is going to, the big difference is it takes the individual to make the impetus for the enforcement of the rule.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if a county ordinance, it would simply be done by some appropriate official of the county, mm-hmm. sheriff or whoever it might be.
Okay.
So we'll check the second one and see, find out.
All right, Mr. Nichols, any more?
I think that's it. Oh, just a reminder, remember on the 21st, we've got your work session at 4:00 that'll be on economic development and revenue reduction or expenditure reductions, covering the remaining things on revenue enhancement topics we've talked about recently to get final, or get some guidance on that, and also the expenditure reductions. And then that one on October 19th would be the follow-up from the Economic Development Roundtable. Mm-hmm. Any questions from the board?
Nope, not here.
None here? All righty. So now we'll move on to, does anyone have any updates from their meetings?
Well, I visited the landfill, was down there about an hour, climbed the hill, saw Mr. Opie down there,
yeah.
You know Mr. Opie?
Oh, yeah.
And it really looks like a park down there, too. Good. It really, really looks nice, and he says he cuts it once a week.
I went down there for the first time, since you're saying it, to dump stuff on yeah. my wife. Put me to work over Labor Day, yeah. cleaning up around the house, and,
gets
and I thought it looked really nice.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Well,
and that keeps us in good stead with DEQ because they do the checking on the is it DEQ on the landfill and where the vents are and mm-hmm. where the markers are. We have to keep all that stuff clear, and it wasn't ever being kept clear before. Now it is, and so
but it is now.
Very pleased with us.
And you might want to look at the road a little bit. See what
oh,
you
yeah.
think.
It's
what you think about that. I know you have trouble all the time with it. But just take a look at it. It's not real bad right now, but as you go into winter and all, it gets worse. So.
Yes.
Yeah, Mr. Stevenson has that on his radar for sure.
It's
a terrible area. We're hoping to get a little bit of improvement done to it when we put the tower in there.
Yes.
Because the tower will be going down there. One tower.
And all that equipment's going to have to.
May need to improve the road a little bit because of that. So.
Mm-hmm. All right. Mm-hmm. Anyone else?
Well, I had the privilege of touring the Red Rocker Candy.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, sweet.
You didn't eat too much,
yeah.
did you?
No, nice. No. With Robert Hurt and the owner.
Robert Hurt.
And that was the day that he had come to Fluvanna to thank us for supporting his office in Fluvanna at the library. And then after the Economic Roundtable on August 31st, attended the annual Farm Bureau meeting, and that was very interesting.
Yeah, those are good. I haven't been to that stuff.
All right. I got dunked in the tank about 75
Ooh.
Times.
Wow. How much money did you make?
I have no idea, but one lady walked up and said, I'm not a very good thrower. I'll give you $20. I'm going to walk up there and push the button.
Oh,
I said, if you give $20, absolutely you may walk up there and push the button.
Was that in the fair?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
That was part of the fair.
Yeah.
Was
yeah.
the water cold?
Well, put it this way. For about the next week, I was not feeling the best, but it's okay. It was a good, it was for a good cause. But
yeah. How did it do there? Pretty good?
I mean, I know
you
got
but I'm just wondering.
Aaron's got a report for us
in
the end.
It was really nice. My daughter and grandchildren came up, too.
It was great.
Once again, every person that I talked to that went there
mm-hmm.
had a ball.
Other
than Thursday night rain.
Wednesday night.
Wednesday night.
It was great.
And
did you ride any? I didn't ride any.
No, ma'am. I'm not a big rider. That Dunkin' booth was a ride enough for me.
I did everyone more than once. And my granddaughter did them more than twice.
So yeah.
She had fun with her $15 band or wristband.
Oh, and the finance.
I bet she would. Yeah.
It was great.
We did not meet with the finance committee yesterday. Ms. Lenher could not get together with us, so we figured since it's the finance committee, we couldn't have a treasurer.
Mm-hmm.
Might as well wait until we can have her. All righty. Now, we will open our first round of public comment. Anyone wishing to address the board should come to the podium and state your name and address. Please remember to keep your comments to 5 minutes on topic and direct it to the board. Anyone wishing to address the board at this time? Seeing no one wishing to speak, we will close the first round of public comment. Next, we will move on. There are no public hearings, so we're going to head on to action matters. Now we will move to action matters at tab L, FY17 staff pay plan. Mr. Nichols.
So this is the pay plan that we considered before. There's just a little bit of update to it. The hard copy that's in front of you is slightly different than what you got in the package. I added one more column, the gray column on there. Mrs. Eager had requested some numbers, and so I just added it onto the sheet there. So the blue column, the dark blue column, is what the pay plan that was approved in the budget season. But remember that that pay plan costs $100,934. The amount of dollars fully available are only $87,194 because the $29,000 from the state is not forthcoming. So line one was the amount of the pay plan for Plan A. Line two is what was budgeted. Take the $29,000 off line three from the state. And so, therefore, the pay plan balance available in the fiscal year 17 budget is that $87,194. So if you stay with line one, the $100,934, the plan is originally proposed, then we need to find $13,740. Normally that would come from personnel contingency or from, in this case, board contingency, but because it's relatively small, personnel contingency certainly would be reasonable as well. If you decrease it by 0.25% across the board, then the makeup amount is $6,000. If you decrease it by 0.5%, the makeup amount is zero. And if you go with the plan of just $500 across the board for those that are eligible, and it would actually be a little less than this because I didn't calculate the part-timers at half that amount, $250 instead of $500. It's $80,000, and again, no makeup amount. So those are the Plan A and then three other options for the board to consider.
Are there any questions from the board?
Well, I guess the whole design of this plan is at or above comp salary. In other words, we have 92 individuals that qualify for that, right?
The basic cost of living.
Yeah, which is 60% of the total amount of people we're talking about. The other 40% are the ones that go any place from 3% to 10%, depending on which one you want to go on.
Well, if you look at the news sheet, the numbers are pretty close, but the 87... There's 87 in line 8, where it says, you know, the blue line 8.
Mm-hmm.
So 87 out of 134 that are eligible for the pay plan. 47 people down below are not. But 87 out of the 134 eligible, so it would be 87 divided by 134, that percentage.
I guess that you're concerned about at or above the comp salary. So we shouldn't be concerned so much about them then, because they already qualify.
Right.
It's the ones over top there that you're concerned about. So if I were going to give a raise, I would go from that point on up. That's where I would be. Because you already have at or above comp, and that's what you're concerned about. So that you're already covered with 92 people, which is 60% of the total people you have, 40% that you're concerned about.
I understand your point, but that's not what was proposed.
I know, but...
Or what was approved, yeah, but yes, I understand.
I know that's not what you proposed, but Social Security, there was no raise given there.
Correct.
Inflation was what, 1.1% someplace in that neighborhood. Mm-hmm. So all these figures are pretty much, or a lot of them are over that. And, you know, we cannot continue to go in debt and to continue to build a budget as to where we already are right now, because I'm really concerned about this next year. And that's where I am.
Mr. Chair, I would like for us to stick to what we put in the budget. Well, we only need 13.
My thought about this, and this is why I asked last time to go back and take a look, I think a majority of these that are above the 2% are trying to fix things that we as a group sat down and thought we needed help to get right. And I think we can come up. I mean, we've already approved that the $87,000 is in our budget. Mm-hmm. We'd be asking for $13,000 out of contingency.
It's not a lot of money to come out, but it's cumulative.
It's still coming out.
You know, it's still coming out, and it's $13,000 here, it's $28,000 somewhere else. And,
yes, ma'am.
You know, as to be responsible to the people. I think we should stay in budget. But I am concerned about the people who are below market, but, you know, the people who are at or above comp, I don't think they need to get the same.
But they're not getting the same. The ones that are at or above comp are getting the 2% that the state talked about. They're getting the 2% across the board there. It's the ones that were below the comp that are getting more.
Right. So I think we can make up the 13,000 and the people who are at or above. And if you
I hate not to give them at least two.
Yeah.
Yeah,
well, that's up to you. I'm not going to approve that. So.
And we talk about 13,000 may not be a lot of money. I agree. I'm not talking particularly about the 13,000. I'm talking about the individuals that's working in this county, for all the people in this county, the job that they're doing, the staff that we have. I'm going from a more of a humanistic point of view. And I don't, you know, we've knocked this around, and we have been talking about trying to get the salaries up to market. I think we started back in 2000, and what was it,
Fiscal year,
long time ago, we've been talking about that. When we had the dip in 2008, we didn't get it, people didn't get salaries increased for a long time. So we were being responsible citizens to responsible board members. So, and they went without salaries for years.
Because they were all eight.
So now I think we have the opportunity to raise some people.
I'm saying 2%
here. You have a question?
I was showing him where I was talking about 2%.
He was just saying exactly, showing me what he was talking about keeping those at or above comps base level. No increase for them.
I can't agree on
remind the board that mm-hmm. this is what you approved in the budget. Now, the 29,000 came back, but you approved this in the budget.
And it's not the state.
Take the $29,000 off. But you approved it in the budget.
If you take the $29,000 off and drop to Plan C, it's a wash.
But
remember, you didn't cover the cost of increases in benefits this year.
Mm-hmm.
Some of that cost went to the employees. Mm-hmm. It's not like employees' costs aren't increasing.
Yeah.
So just keep that in mind. Is the benefits, this was a balancing act between benefits. Last year, did a straight low cost of living. We didn't do any target raises, which was supposed to be the third year of trying to catch up.
So
this year you approved the catch up on there, but you didn't cover benefits all the way around. So it's not like employees are getting some big luxury here.
But nobody's talking about luxury.
No.
But
I mean,
you have to look at the whole picture. It's
I don't disagree at all.
Yeah, but
if we lost funding.
And it's not the employees' fault that we lost funding. It's not their fault that the state had low revenue and they couldn't come up with it. So why are we penalizing them when we can find, we've got 13,740. And you can, Mr. Weaver, you need to tell me more than just say, why do we continue doing this? Give me a solution. Tell me something rather than always denying and cutting. What else? I mean, we're sitting on this board. We're doing everything to try to get revenue, and we're talking. But
why don't you live within your budget? That's what I'm saying.
You can't always live in your
budget. Well, that's your opinion. The rest of us live within our budget.
Well, you may.
Yeah, absolutely, I do.
Well, you maybe haven't had a catastrophe in your family, or you may not have had an extra breakdown.
But other people have to live within their family, or they go bankrupt. And I don't want to go bankrupt.
We're not going bankrupt.
This is not a lot of money. I think what we're talking here more is
we're talking about people.
It absolutely is principle.
Yes,
and I want...
I'm a principle and people.
I want our employees to feel appreciated.
Yes.
And
I think
don't think 2%
more than $13,000 for them to feel appreciated.
No, they're feeling appreciated with any kind of increase. I can imagine how they feel.
I know
feel
they would like
us.
It to be a whole lot bigger.
Yeah, I know how I would feel if I were sitting out there.
I know how I felt when I lost, and I
hear
how I felt when we got nothing.
Supervisors,
don't you think the rest of us have been in that
Mr.
same
Wheeler,
shape for
how
about 3 years and not get one penny?
Yeah, I've been 4 and 5 years, and these people have too.
Yeah,
absolutely.
They have
absolutely.
Been without money, so now we have an opportunity to do it. Why are we? What are we proving?
I think we're trying to look at a bigger picture. We're over $100 million in debt.
Yes, we are, and that's not going to change. And $13,000 is not going to change that.
Well,
it's not $100 million.
It's 103 as of the last fiscal year.
But it's still there, and it's not going to change. We will pay it, it's not going to poof away.
No,
we have a plan.
But you have to be responsible.
I've been responsible, and I've been on this board a long, long time.
You have.
Long time, and I've seen us come out and come out well. And I've seen the things that we're in debt for is because that's what we need. Because in the past, we never did anything. And we let things accumulate and accumulate. And then it was a time to do it, and it was double the price. We put ourselves in these predicaments.
Yeah, we sure did put ourselves in this predicament.
With the no votes and no solutions.
It's been on both sides that we put ourselves here. And I hate to use the word sides, but can we agree to one of these plans? Can we agree to
plan? If you agree to plan C, then that accomplishes everybody.
Everybody's getting something.
Something.
Everybody's getting something.
What amount are we talking about?
Stays within the budget, and everyone's getting something.
Stick to the plan.
They're getting their catch up.
A.
And this is where you're at a 1.5 versus 2%.
If we go plan B, it costs us $6,000.
Yeah, I could live with what you're saying, 1.5.
Okay.
I'm sorry, staff. I'm really sorry that we don't care enough about you. That we are quibbling over $13,000. Much.
If you do go with plan C, could I ask that you use the full $87,194 so that we can spread it? Maybe 1.6% and 9.6%, but it wouldn't be more than what is there, the $87,194.
No, I think what's budgeted is appropriate.
Okay.
Can't get you to.
That's right.
Move to plan B.
Even the school, they're digging into their budgets so that they can be true to what they've said to their staff. They're going to cut, they're going to do things that they can do. I think that's a real commitment to your staff. We're talking about staff right now. I'm not talking about taxpayers.
Well, we're talking about taxpayers.
I know.
We have to worry about both.
They
are both important.
This is a compromise.
I'm not voting for the compromise. We need to stick to what we said. $13,000.
13 is a lot better than 29.
13. I thought it was going to be 29. They've gotten it down to 13. Not 29.
And
that 13 is not going to hurt anybody.
Go ahead.
All right. I move the Board of Supervisors approve the budget amendment to decrease. I move the Board.
Do the first one anyway, because you have to do the first one.
I do?
That's
the
29.
Yeah, the first one you have to do. That's the 29,000 state.
Okay. I move the Board of Supervisors approve a budget amendment to decrease FY17 state funding by 29,000 and decrease the FY17 staff pay plan by 29,000 due to elimination of state supported funding for social services and constitutional officers pay raise.
Second.
That's really just state funding.
Yeah.
Recognizing we're not getting it. The argument comes on your second motion.
Yeah.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. We have a motion made by Mrs. Eager, seconded by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye.
And then this is the one.
All opposed?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-0.
Dan, you're on the second.
I need to ask a question before we go any further.
Okay.
Sir, if we don't pass something today, does that mean we get nothing, or can we come back and readdress?
No, you can come back at the next meeting. It's just that I don't want to delay too terribly far because we have to get some packages ready. We have to get some sheets ready for all the departments. But if you want to bring it back on the 21st, we certainly can.
And I'm sure we're going to have a bunch of people coming in here the next meeting clapping their hands saying, y'all saved us $13,000.
Plan D.
No, that's
not. What,
we should use, this is what we budgeted.
Yeah, right.
I agree with Mr. Nichols that that's what should be used.
Okay.
Okay.
Can we go to Plan B and just give $6,000?
I'm not going to add anything extra. I can approve what he has, but I'm not taking any more out of contingency.
We'll take out 6, but not 13. If you go to B, you'll take out 6,000 out of contingency, but not 13.
See here, I guess you're taking this out. You'd have to take this out.
Yes.
What is this?
Well, why not go right here and you don't take anything out?
Well, because the staff,
We're talking about...
Well, everybody feels like they need more. So, you know, if that's what you all... That's up to you all.
And how much increase would it be, do you think? It's somewhere between 2% and 1.75 if you stay with your budget?
No, ma'am, it'll be less than 1.75. It'll be about 1.6.
Yeah, it really depends. We may find out that there's more adjustments on it. We may find out that it's better to cover a few of those other ones at their original print, the 10% instead of the 9, and just leave 1.5. We'll play with it a little bit and tell you what the final numbers are. But I'm just suggesting, if you're going to go with Plan C, allow us to use the full budgeted amount. Mm-hmm. If you're going to go with Plan B, then it requires $6,000. If you're going to go with Plan A, it requires 13. Again, those were all budgeted. And the 13 and the 6 are in your budget. They just happen to be in the contingency pots. They're in the tax rate.
Yeah, I said it's already in the budget. It's there. The money is there. It's not that we are taking it out of fund balance.
To me, if it's in a contingency that wasn't earmarked, it's there for...
It is earmarked. It has a purpose.
Not for this.
It has a purpose.
Yeah, but not necessary for this. It can be for anything that the board wants to use it for.
Except for that. Where is that written?
Hey, you know, whatever the board adopts, your contingency money for almost anything almost anything almost the board chooses to do is
right.
It's legal.
Right.
That's what it's there for. It's because something.
For emergency, basically.
Right.
That's
for
what it is.
Things are over expended. Or
this is an emergency. You don't think this is an emergency? You don't think this
where
is
money
an emergency
is pulled
for our staff?
By the state.
Beg your pardon?
Or where money is pulled by the state.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah, and you've got two pots, $75,000 in personnel contingency and $150,000 in board contingency.
And this could come from either one of those if you wanted to use it.
Whatever finance and HR says, I mean, in this case, because it was a budget thing, I would take it out of BOS contingency. If it's during the year where someone changes from single health care plan and a new person comes in family health care plan, that comes out of personnel contingency. That's what that pot's for. But it really doesn't matter. It's just a budget exercise. And you just have to decide which one you want, which amount you're willing to do.
I have a motion, Mr. Chair.
Do we have a second for Plan A?
I have a motion for Plan A.
Is there a second?
I'll take the gavel if you like, sir.
No, ma'am, I'm not going to do that.
It's legal.
Yes, ma'am. Okay, well, Plan A is now done. Is there another motion?
I make a motion. I move that the Board of Supervisors approve an updated FY17 pay plan with option C with the transfer of
There is no transfer.
There is no transfer. Zero.
Zero transfer.
Well, I'm going to have to modify this because I'd like the full amount that was budgeted, the $80,194, to be used in additional funding, well, to be used for the funding.
Move the board approve fiscal year 17 pay plan option C with an amount not to exceed $87,194 in budgeted funds.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, we have a motion made. Is there a second?
Second.
Motion made by Ms. Seeger, seconded by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
And chair votes nay. So that one is 2-2.
So do you want it on your next agenda or defer? Yes. Or how do you want to do it?
Put down there.
Well, we'll have to defer it to the next agenda and come up with an answer. Now we'll move to action matters, tab M, NCT Tower Site Agreement for VFW Site. Ms. Elliott.
Good evening. What you have before you is the only lease that is going to be required for the radio. For the radio project. All of the other sites we either own outright or they are like Dominion BREMO, where there is no cost. BREMO allows us to be on the tower and on the site at as a public safety or a public service. So there's no cost other than the utilities for that particular site. So this NCT site at the VFW is the only lease. So remember when we were looking at what it was going to cost us for the lease, and we were looking at $500,000 to $600,000 a year, we've got it down to $18,000 a year because of the one lease, which is wonderful. But I know we've had capital outlays for the new towers, but for the ongoing lease amounts, we've gotten down to less than $20,000 a year.
They have a monopole there now?
No, there's nothing there.
That
one was approved in 2011 and as a SUP for a monopole. And what this lease is before you, there's a couple of changes because when we negotiated with them, it was to have a monopole with a 10-foot extension where we could put our antennas on that 10-foot extension. And as we got thinking, it makes no sense at all to build a tower with an extension. So why not build it to what we need instead of building it with an extension? So in talking with NCT, they agreed, and they agreed to build a 250-foot lattice tower rather than a monopole there.
And pay for it.
And we had discussed whether the county would pay the difference between a 195 and the 250 to assist, and they said, no, we will do it ourselves. So what this lease agreement says is that they will own and build a 250-foot tower and allow us to be, and we will be on, our antennas will be at the top and the microwave down a little bit further, plus the ground space that we need for that, for $1,500 a month or $18,000 a year lease. Plus, for the first two carriers that would come onto that tower, it will reduce our monthly payments by $250. So eventually, if after there's two carriers, at least two carriers on the tower, then our rent will be $1,000 a month, or $12,000 a year.
Why did we not get a free space up there? It's my understanding that we certainly have put that into conditions in the past.
That was not in that has been in conditions for towers in the past, but it was not on this one.
Why not?
I don't know. I mean, with all of the negotiations that went in 2011, it was the first right of that the county would have first right of refusal to be on the tower.
Since 2012, I don't know of any towers where we have an agreement to get it free. We have agreements to get first right at top billing.
Right, but there are some.
When you all changed the rules in 2012 or 13, it was to be at top, but not necessarily free.
We would get one free space.
I don't think so, sir.
Well, maybe not, but no. That's what I thought.
There is a tower.
I think that's right.
First right refusal, but we still have to pay for it?
Well, you may or may not. Dominion, we don't have to.
Right, Dominion.
But in general, we didn't have a rule that says we get free space.
There's a there's a difference. Dominion is doing this because it's appropriate.
Sure.
What I think you're talking about was the sort of routine condition of special use permit that the county have a right of access on the town. And I don't remember whether it was ever done. It hasn't been done recently, I know, that the county was given that without any consideration.
There is one right now. There's a Verizon tower in off of it's on Route 6. I can't remember the name of the road. There is one. It's a 125-foot tower that the county has free access to the tower and ground space. But that tower has not been built, and that was put in the conditions, but that was approved back earlier in the 2000s. Yes.
I think you're worse than
before you set the rules.
The first one that we had was the one up by where the fire station now is.
What would be documented?
And we did that.
What I don't understand why it's not free. And have you looked at other locations where we could get it free?
Well, yes. I mean, we have. This is one site that we need in the circle, because there are no other options in the area. The other option for us would be for us to build a tower ourselves. But this essentially, instead, we would pay the $18,000 a year for the lease, rather than spending about $375,000 to build our own.
It decreases.
Right, and then with the with the 500, the 250 decrease, so it would be $12,000 plus the, you know, it'll increase every so often with the consumer price index. As that goes up, it will increase as all other leases.
I mean, since we did it with Verizon, and I also went on their piece of land looking at that specific tower. I've been there before. Not only have I been there, I've been down on Route 6 looking at, I think it was two other sites, personally gone down and looked at them. So I'm wondering, you know, maybe there's one that could be built down lower on Route 6 where it's higher ground, and we get it free for the top. I mean, that's not unreasonable. You go up to 250 feet, you're already giving them more than the county ordinary allows, and that should be a big deal for most of them.
Well, and what this does, I think one of their, and I can't speak for them from how the way that they're looking at it, but I think with no other carriers on there, it makes business sense to have at least one paying customer on that tower in order to be for them to have the financing to build it. Mm-hmm. Too, but it does save us in the long run. We don't have to maintain the tower. We don't have to insure the tower. All we will have is our utilities on it, and also in the lease, we have agreed to pay for the lighting that the FAA requires. It's somewhere $12,000 to $18,000. It'll depend a little bit about what the markers that the FAA requires for that height. And then we will pay for the utilities for that part.
Yeah, I'm surprised we didn't get a free spot on that, because that, I know, was the intention of the board years ago. They were doing that, and all the benefits went to the people who owned the towers. And we said, county's not getting anything really out of these. So anymore, one of the conditions will be that we'll get a free spot on there.
Then I would suggest that for new towers that go in, that the conditions be written, and they are written, that the county has first right of refusal. The Cohasset one is the same thing, and that's one of the reasons we decided not to go with that, because it would have been very expensive for us to be on there, because it's first right of refusal. So the company could say, "Do you want to be on it?" Yes. Well, then it's going to cost you a gazillion dollars to do it, and then we say no, because
that's what we
need.
The alternative in this case is tell them to don't build the 250, just build the 195 as you planned. They may or may not build that. That doesn't matter necessarily to the county. VFW won't like that, but VFW wants the rental income. We can build our own tower someplace down in that area, but you're going to have to buy the land. Mm-hmm. Build the tower, and we've already tried that a few places.
And
we're trying to
go
private
right
land.
Place?
We're going to be facing up the same thing. Right. You want to spend $50,000, $60,000, $80,000, $100,000 for a half acre of private land, like we've been tried to get a couple different times, or go with an existing tower and pay $18,000 or less, because they will reduce it by every
Every two, for the first two carriers.
For the first two, they'll reduce our rent.
I just guess I wondered if you looked at those other locations.
We have.
Down along Route 6.
We have.
Without question, but we don't own any land down there, Mr. Green.
I didn't say you did, but a landowner has to give you permission to sell a spot for those towers.
But they may not be appropriate in
those
areas.
For this tower or for
A tower that would take the place of this.
The alternative to this one is pay the 18 with whatever decrease on a 250 in the exact location we want, or buy a piece of property in somewhere in that area and build our own tower. So $750,000?
No, about $375,000 plus land acquisition.
Now that's what you have in that thing here.
Ms. Elliott, I have a question. Mm-hmm. You said earlier if we were to, our price is $18,000 to start. If I was a company and I wanted to co-locate on that, what would they charge?
Anywhere from $2,000 to $4,500 a 10-foot section.
$2,000?
Per month.
$2,000
to
$4,500. Yeah.
$24,000 to $50,000 a year.
A month, you said?
A year. $2,000 to $4,500
a month. What did they want to charge us down at Remo, at the Morris Bowl?
That was $2,500 or $3,000 a section.
A
month, and we needed two. Yeah. On that one, we needed two sections. On the one in Kent Store, we needed three sections. One section and two sections. So I think it was $3,000 a month per section. So the Kent Store one would have cost us $6,000 a month to lease space on that one. The Morris one would have been $3,000 a month.
You're better to build your own, like you said.
Right, and that's why we looked at combining those two, the 250, 280 sites, and that's why we're building the one at Columbia School. Because
right.
It takes two sites and makes one, with going a little higher, that works out really as a good sense to do that.
So you do have you did negotiate a better deal than what we would get for a normal
business. Plus they're not, because of wanting to put the receipt, and the space that we're renting on the tower is actually for the microwave dishes. And with going from a monopole to a lattice tower, we have two microwave dishes that have to go on that tower, and they have to be at the same height. But those things are 6 foot in diameter, so on a monopole, they would not be able to go in the same space. One would have to be higher than a lower, which would mean we'd need two spaces, two 10-foot sections. With a lattice tower, there's three legs. So we can put a microwave dish on the same height, that 180, but they'll be on different legs and then slightly turned to be able to meet the other microwave dishes, which actually makes it more efficient. So we can get away with just one space on the tower, and then we'll put the receive antenna at the very top, so that basically it's useless space for carriers up there on the top. So we're getting that space free per se, because it's not usable. They can't put a cell carrier right at the top.
But essentially, they're building, instead of building a 195-foot monopole out of their money, to our benefit, they're building a 250-foot lattice, and we're only getting charged for the one spot where we've got two microwave dishes, but the receive antenna
is
on top. But I mean, essentially, they're spending $375,000 to build the tower, whereas, yes, we can go find a piece of land and build the tower, but it is absolutely the minimum of $375,000 time delay plus land acquisition. And the land acquisition stuff so far has not gone very well as far as price.
And $18,000 per year goes a long way when you talk about $450,000.
Let's say it's 20 years, that's $360,000, but the cost of money is future year cost. We don't have to pay, we're not paying now and taking debt on that lease payment. But I think this is a really good deal for us.
But well, $18,000 with a 3% increase on it, you know, after 25 years, you'll be paying more than double that at that point in time. Now, to your point, you know,
sure,
cost of money will have changed at that point as well, too. I wonder if it makes more sense for us to pursue a shorter-term lease with the idea that we would build another tower when we're looking at, you know, our debt structure being slightly different from where it is now. And I don't know if that was considered or not.
What are the lease provisions walking away?
Let's see, if the initial term is 25 years.
So what are the outcomes?
I have it here. Let me. I'd have to look.
I'll pull it up just.
And well, I won't say it, but.
I think well, it's just prior to
to
renewal.
Site to build the tower ourselves. You just don't have time to get the radio system operational.
I mean, what is the deadline on that?
Yesterday.
Because of the trees and all that.
Yesterday. We've got to get these towers in place and known because then she has to go to the FCC to get frequencies. If we don't know the exact position of where the antennas are going to go, then she can't get FCC frequencies.
So we're way behind on this.
Yes, sir.
Everything is tight. If you delay one more month, then you're going to be pushing everything out farther and farther and farther, and you've got to do certain things at certain times of the year. We're right on tight schedule right now, but you don't want to push it out.
The term is it's a first the initial
unless
term
earlier terminated as expressly provided the herein,
which is 90 days prior to the expiration of the applicable term. If you're going to, it automatically renews unless it's 90 days. But what I'm not sure if the first term is 25 years or if it's 5 years. It's in section 3.
I'm looking at section.
Oh.
A lease year shall mean the 12-month period beginning on the commencement date and each subsequent 12-month period. Mm-hmm. So that means it's 12. Fred on there says that a lease year shall mean 12-month period. It says, notwithstanding the foregoing, after the initial term, tenant may terminate the agreement prior to the start of any lease year during the renewal terms by providing written notice.
And is the first term 25 years, Fred?
Yeah, they refer to the initial term.
The initial term
is
25.
Now, we changed that to 25 from 15. The original discussion was 15 years. Because we wanted to have it locked in so they couldn't. Oh, section 15 is termination, too. Oh, but it deals with default.
No, it's terminated after the initial 25-year term.
Well, we can change that and we can make it less terms. I mean, less.
Well, that would be the
term.
Question. If there's no substantial cost to changing it to a 15-year term, then it gives the board some flexibility.
That's just there's pros and cons to that.
Absolutely.
Obviously, having the 25 locks us in, but it locks us in for both purposes.
Sure.
Where they can't stop us, but we can't get out without negotiating.
Right. And I mean, we're under the time delay constraint. It just at some point in time, maybe the county would decide it wanted to build its own tower, but that would at that point in time require re-engineering.
Right. Yeah.
I guess there would be a number of things that would happen if you were to do that that might make that complicated. I'm just asking if that was explored.
Pure land acquisition. Well, the 15-year term was there.
Yeah.
Did we consider going finding a piece of land and building our own tower? Absolutely not. And the reason we didn't was because this. Tower will go up fast based on their agreement. Mm-hmm. We don't have to acquire land, and we believe that the terms for our antennas on the tower were incredibly good. Mm-hmm. Yes, over the course of 25 years, those costs add up, but take the same cost and build a 375-foot tower, $375,000 tower, plus the cost of land acquisition, say $50,000.
Mm-hmm. And maintenance.
Maintenance is, we'll pay a little bit of maintenance for here and electrical for there anyway. But let's assume there's none of that. $375 plus $50, $425 initial investment capitalized over the life of the project, because we would be doing debt service on that. I think this is you all decide.
And then the only other question, I think the lease gives you the ability to sublease portions of the space. Obviously, you have a small space, but is there enough space in there that you would consider subleasing?
The subleasing would all belong to NCT.
Right.
So it is built. It is built for. I mean, it would be built for six carriers. And the way that they have it designed right now, it's a break. Breakaway tower, which there's not, I don't believe there's any reason that they would have to do that. which would actually, structurally, they can go, they could actually put more carriers on it. But remember, carriers coming onto a tower is a business decision, and if they don't have enough customers in that area, a carrier is not going to go on that tower. Mm-hmm. But having it a little taller makes it a little more advantageous for the carriers, especially since there's no towers in that area, and a great need for service, cell service, but also, I mean, all of our towers, adding all the towers together in the county gives us more infrastructure for broadband when we get to that. Mm-hmm. Broadband needs to be closer than public safety towers. I mean, we only have 6 public safety towers in the county. Broadband will have to be between 1 and 3 miles apart. Mm-hmm. So there'll need to be more infrastructure related to that. But if you have a big tower that could be a hub, and then smaller towers, that could be an option.
Is there sufficient space on that space that we would be leasing that we would be able to accommodate access points for broadband?
Yes. Yeah. And I think if
within,
that
within the lease that we have, so.
Well, it would be a new negotiate. Mm-hmm. I mean, we'd need to renegotiate for space for a broadband, if a broadband.
So within that 10-foot section that we have, we would not be able to put in.
No, you would have to, because it can block what's in. Mm-hmm. So you don't normally put things in there, but the broadband, I mean, it could potentially go anywhere else on the tower, and again, we could negotiate that. Now, all of our other towers, because they're county-owned, the revenue would come back to the county, mm-hmm. and then that would be part of that leasing, you know, and it would go, right now, the average is $2,000 a month is what we charge leasees on our towers. Now, whether that's, and that's low as far as we're looking at what the going rates are. It depends on where the tower is and how much in demand it is. But when we were looking at tower space was 2,000 to 4,500 a 10-foot section.
Have we had any bites so far?
No, but we haven't really been talking that far. Once the towers, once the applications go in for the tower heights with the FAA, that's when the carriers they will know that we're putting these towers up. Plus, we are in contact with the carriers we've been in contact about that to make sure that they know, because we want to make some changes. Even with the Palmyra Tower, there's been some discussion of the potential of moving the carriers that are there over to the sheriff's office, so that there would be a little bit of expansion for those carriers that are there, but it would mean possibility of one less monopole that we have to maintain. So.
Okay. Are there any other questions?
Any other questions about the lease? Or, I mean, we can change the initial term to 15 or even less if you want.
If it's going to delay,
to them, no. Saying here's what you approved,
right?
They're going to have to either agree or not agree. And I don't know that they will, but I'm not sure that they won't. Right.
Well, we originally had it 15 years.
Just because you want it in 5 years doesn't mean they're going to agree to it.
Right.
That's right. Yeah.
No, and if they've already suggested that and if the terms were the same, then I would think 15 years would give you that flexibility.
Well, 15 is what was there originally, right?
Correct. And we just changed that in the last couple days.
We're probably not going to push back against that if we just make it as 15 right. with the 5 years.
I mean, you do run the risk that the price goes up, but at that point, then you have an option as well, too. So I would suspect altogether the cost is... Yeah, you're back to kind of the same point, which is it's more or less a break-even at $2,000 a month or 18. I mean, by the time, if you were to look at the 3% and all that... If you were to go and build it, it's a break-even, but I think the appetite for additional debt is low. So 15 years from now, maybe that appetite.
The other thing to consider, though, too, is that is a very rural area of the county, and there aren't any towers in that area right now. And if you build a 250 and you have a couple of carriers that come on, there may not be a need for, if we would build another tower, we may not have any. It may just be public safety. Yeah. So I don't know if you...
No, that's a fair point.
If you're going to direct us to build a tower in that area of the county, I would, and I don't know if we can legally do this, I would strongly urge to pull back the approval for that tower, because we don't want them everywhere, especially if they're not going to be used. So if we're going to go forward with the county building a tower down there, can we back off on an already approved?
Actually, Mr. Nichols, the SUP needs to be modified because it is for a 195.
Well, no, I understand that.
And so that could just be denied, and that's going before that's in the Planning Commission's hands now.
Hold on.
That's the answer to the question.
They were approved for a 195.
But if this amendment goes forward, then they are not approved for a 195.
Correct. But as they're current, can we pull the authority on their current 195?
It probably depends on how long it's been sitting there with no action.
In the 2 years?
Yes.
It has been outside of that.
We go back
in over 2 years, right?
They're probably active now because we've been actively negotiating with them, but I'm suggesting that you don't need two towers in that area, and if you're going to have us go build a tower someplace, buy land and build a tower, then...
But I guess, why did we not look at the kids' location, which the board had considered
we did.
Several years ago? When you get a free spot on it, that was negotiated before it was ever built, that it would go free. And I thought each tower we built now, it was automatically built in, that the county would get a free spot.
Yeah, it is not. It is since at least 2011, it's been that the conditions have been written that the county has first right of refusal. Before that, the conditions require to give us free space for public safety. I don't know what changed in 2011 on that.
That doesn't make sense for the county.
You approved it.
Huh? That didn't make sense, though. Whether I approved it or not, I didn't know what I was doing then.
It went to the board, and the board approved it.
We did look at it.
It's a good deal to change it? To have changed it?
You didn't have a policy before to get a free space, Mr. Weaver.
That's right, we didn't.
Right. And so what happened was the Planning Commission in 2010 started talking about it. In 2011 and 12, the Planning Commission recommended new language, and part of that language was that we would get first right refusal on a top spot for emergency communications. The Planning Commission bought off on that, and the board bought off on that. At the same time, you also said you didn't want to have towers above 195. Before that, it had been 125. So, you know, whether that was a good idea or not a good idea, I'm not sure you're going to find too many towers that are going to come here and build. Say, oh, sure, you can have the top building on our tower, you know, free. And
well, we got one.
That's because Dominion is a
no. We didn't at kids.
No, no, it's on Route 6 on the other end, but near Columbia. Is where it is. Kids Store, there is a spot that what the SUP was approved for beyond Kids Store.
Right.
But location-wise, it's too close to the landfill and does not cover down around the James and around in Scottsville. So the site at the VFW is critical at where the location is. We would need another site that's very close to that. So
and,
now
and
I guess what you could do is you could pull...
But you did say that we have some free space on some towers, per se.
Yeah, there is at least one SUP that was approved for a 125.
Yes.
Off of, I can't think of the name of the road.
That's what I don't understand.
Bryant's
why
Ford. It's
changed.
Off near Bryant's Ford.
Doesn't make
in
sense.
Columbia.
It wasn't changed, sir.
Okay.
All that happened is on that specific tower, for whatever reason, and I don't know when that was approved, but for whatever reason, the terms with that one from the provider to us included a free spot
right.
on there for.
Why wouldn't you have that part of the deal in any tower that any company came in here?
I think one of the answers to that is the companies were beginning to push back on it. And it occurs
well,
to me.
Well, if they wanted 250, you're really giving them a deal there.
Well, but you know, you're asking historically. Historically, you couldn't get 250.
Absolutely.
You got 125. Now, if we're prepared, if we're giving them a good deal, so they're giving them a 250-foot tower and they really want that, we could ask to have it rent free. But that's a matter of negotiation.
But could that not be put in the ordinance? A tower will require...
I wouldn't tell you definitively you couldn't do it. But I know people have objected to that.
It's almost like a
problem. Well, sure, they would object.
No,
it's, right?
Well, yes, but what I'm telling you is that's an exaction from. It would be like saying we want you to you want to put in a store and we'll approve your store, but in order to do it, you got to put in.
We need free milk.
We got to put in four lane highway to accommodate.
But you're not definitive on that.
I'm not definitive on it. I think that would be a that's an arguable position. And I think what happened was historically, you know, I mentioned before, the first one that we dealt with in this was a long time ago up by the where the fire station is now, the Palmyra Fire Station, that tower. And they wanted that real badly, and we owned the land. So they built the tower for us. But
well, the big tower,
it was our land,
was in the Antioch area. And I think they were going to have to put lights on that one. And it was voted down by something like a 3-2 vote.
Right.
That was on 795, I think it was.
Right. But that was, again, under the old rules, it was a maximum of 125 feet.
Yeah.
Another thing to consider is with this design of our new public safety system, we most likely will not need to build any additional towers in the county. So the six sites now that we have are the only sites that will be needed for public safety. So in 25 years or so, when our system needs an upgrade, it will still function on those six sites. We will not need to add additional sites. So going forward, we may not need to have that kind of language. The first right of refusal may be sufficient. Plus, with the broadband, if you're going to attach broadband, that would unless the county is planning to have be a broadband provider, there would likely be a commercial company that would come in and provide that for us, and that would be the same as a carrier coming on those towers, or whether they would build a series of towers of smaller, because broadband doesn't require a public safety. Doesn't as big of a tower as what broadband would. Broadband is a little more than a telephone pole kind of thing.
Well, no. I mean, the higher the point that you are, the better overall. There's an
right.
Advantage to that.
But there's a limit too. Even for carriers.
Carriers don't want to be
above
250. Above 250.
Right.
That's why some of these big towers we're building are great for us, because we want to be that high, but the commercial carriers want to be lower than that. And so for most of the 195s that people are building, that's sufficient. They can
right.
still get three or four providers on there. But in our case, this company has agreed to build a tower that meets our specifications. It's higher. We get the space on it that we want. They can still do other things, but we don't have to spend the capital to buy a new one. And if you want to change the term to 15 years or 10 years or whatever, we'll try it with them and see. But.
I think for the board, the decision, I mean, there's a couple of things you could look at. Probably 15 years is not a big change. Then the county has an opportunity to redo it. The risk, of course, is that they come back and ask for a higher rate. The probability is, in my opinion, that you might see more competition and or technology changes that probably keep the price in check, right? So the risk of their raising the price on us is potentially low. I'm not claiming to be an expert on that, but just looking at how technology has changed, and the fact that you're going to see the areas grow and change, and potentially more towers, especially if there was some sort of a broadband implementation in that, you might have more flexibility. Were we to go in and build our own tower at that point in time, there would probably be some re-engineering costs for the microwaves to point those, but not very significant in changes. But at 3 years from now, 15 years, you're probably, instead of paying $1,800 a month, you're probably paying closer to about, maybe $2,600, $2,700 a month if you ran the escalation, maybe a little higher than that. So if you run the escalation on that, you're paying that, and then you can look at the math and say, does this or doesn't make sense for us? We don't have the time right now to go in and build our own tower and do the things that we need to do without delaying the project. So I think we have to do this. The question is, do we do it for 15 years or do we do it for 25 years right off the bat?
Tony, you came in after she had started, I think, but she said that it would be, once it put two other co-locators on there, that the price goes down to
$250 a month for the first two carriers.
But are we paying $1,500 a month?
Now.
Okay.
Until
after
they get
5 years, you're only at $1,738.
Right, because it was
a 3% escalation built in the contract. You're only at $1,738.
Yeah, I didn't do the math.
But you're only at $1,738 per month.
Right.
But again, if it's reduced by the 500 or 250, that's just an extra benefit. But there is a 3% escalation built in, which is true. And yes, over the course of 25 or 30 years, that could get pretty expensive. But the other towers costs for leasing spaces are going to go up commensurate with that a long time. Most towers are 3 to 5%.
We wouldn't even be to where we were going to start on those other towers.
Well, yeah, I mean, the capital cost of building a tower, plus just the sheer time delay. There's a little bit of frustration only because we've briefed this to you lots of times, and we've talked about this tower.
We talked about dollars. Yes.
Yeah, no, we did. I don't disagree we need to do this. It's just, should we do it for 15 years or 25 years, and what's the risk? So that's
and to Mr. Weaver's point, if you want our policies changed, the lawyers will have to tell us whether it almost kind of seems like a quid pro quo, like a requiring a proffer to give us free space. So it sounds iffy, but maybe it's legal.
I do know that I raised that question at one of the Planning Commission meetings when we were approving one of the towers. I kind of got the sense that we couldn't necessarily do it at that point in time, but I was not 100% happy with the answer that the tower providers gave us, which is, oh yeah, we'll give you a good price, and what are the specifics of the good price? So while you may not be able to force them to do that, you can probably negotiate the price at that point in time at a better rate. And certainly for the top portion, maybe they have a real premium to that, but the lower portions, they might give you more. And that's something we could look at as a policy, because I agree, that seems kind of wrong that, we've got these towers going in place and public safety is charged at, due to the negotiation efforts here, a good rate, below market rate, but it'd be nice to specify what that below market rate is.
But at the end of the day, this issue is an issue for another day.
Absolutely.
Yes, right.
Because we can't get the policy, we can't get the policy in place quick enough to satisfy
that,
what
that
we're
makes sense.
Do.
Absolutely.
I mean, if you want to investigate that,
we can
investigate.
Yeah.
So for each carrier that comes in, the price drops by 250.
For the first two.
But it's my estimation, it's likely that there won't be more than two. There could be, but...
Well, even if there's 37, we only get the first two.
Right.
Let's just hope that the first two jump on. Because it saves us $500 a month. $6,000 a year. But, again, after 5 years, it's $1,738 a month. So instead of the $18,000, you're up to about $20,000. Just over $20,000.
If we have two carriers within 5 years, then you're down to 14.
Right.
Okay.
So, all right. 15 or 25 years.
Do we have a motion?
I'd like to do the motion. I think I'm satisfied that with the questions I had, and I think this is necessary for the county, and it seems to be of
And we have two separate
time.
Motions. We have two separate motions, correct?
Yes.
And with the second motion, just to let you know what's happening time-wise, the SUP, to modify the SUP, is with the Planning Commission now, and it'll go to Planning Commission the end of this month, and then you will see that in the public hearing in October. Around at the same time, we are running the site plans through planning and zoning, the ENS plans, and also the building permit plans will be going the same time, so that when you approve, after the board approves the SUP in October, and then the Planning Commission approves the site plans at the end of October, then the building permits will be issued so that they can get started at the end of October. So just so you know.
Okay, that. So I move the Board of Supervisors approve the tower site agreement for communications tower located at VFW Scottsville Post number 8169 between National Communications Tower and Fluvanna County, and authorize the county administrator to execute the agreement subject to approval as to form by the county attorney.
For your 15-year term?
For it.
Is that going to be 15 or 25?
I thought it was 25.
I didn't think we made a decision on it. Yeah.
We did. I think the risk is relatively low.
Which way do you think is best?
I think the risk is low at 15 years, but I don't know that
Well, I think so too. I think if you
I agree with one thing he says,
it's an automatic
technology
renewal.
Improvements are going to jump within 15 years.
We have 5 year automatic renewals. Five year automatic. So it'd be 40 years instead of 50 years. But again, you can get out at 15 years rather than waiting to 25, and maybe the world will have changed technology wise. So I don't have any problem with going to 15.
I don't either. Should do 15 myself.
Everybody okay with that?
Yeah.
All right, for a 15 year term. Okay. Sorry, second.
Motion's been made by Ms. Seeger, seconded by Ms. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0.
Okay, I move to waive all county assessed fees associated with the amended SUP and construction of the communications tower located at VFW Scottsville, amounting to approximately $3,225.
Second.
Motion made by Mrs. Eager, seconded by Mrs. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. Now we'll move to action matters at tab MC, financial advisor contract.
Good afternoon. On August 1st, we issued an RFP for a new financial advisor for the county. Our prior contract had expired. The RFP closed on August 15th. Raymond James and Associates were the only firm to submit a proposal. We reviewed the proposal. We reviewed their history with the county, also reviewed their costs with other jurisdictions that also use them, and found it to be fair. We did renegotiate and get a little bit more off, so we did good. But we are electing to move forward with them rather than issue a brand new RFP, go through the whole process again, and probably end up with the same result. So we do have the negotiated final costs per hour. Most were reduced by $25 an hour from their original proposal, except for the associate analysts, which stayed the same.
Any questions?
Yeah, well, she said, it's covers some of the history of the county. And I'm going to comment on two or three, maybe four items that's in the context of what we have here. And I don't have any problems with Raymond James and Associates. They are from Florida, aren't they? It's a Florida organization.
Raymond James, they're all over.
Yeah.
But I think their main headquarters.
Their headquarters are in Florida.
In Tampa, Florida.
Right. A few comments that I have that's in the content here. We're going to talk about cost per capita. And they gave these examples. I did not pick them out. Isle of Wight per capita was $4,265 per capita. Frederick County was $1,707. Culpeper was $1,893. And Fluvanna County was $3,626 per capita. And that averaged out per capita at $2,048 for those. How they picked them, I don't know. I did not pick them. And then one of the things that they said about the county, which I'm always proud of, that's our fund balance. They say it was very, very strong available fund balance, which I think we always get compliments on that. Another thing in there that
I found... Are you talking about the CAFR, sir?
Sir?
Are you talking about the CAFR or from Raymond James?
I'm talking about Raymond James gave that. In other words, what I'm saying right now is the context of what's in here.
Okay.
Which page are you looking at?
Multiple. Which page you want to look at?
Oh, okay. I thought you maybe had them.
Well,
I
made notes here, so
okay.
I wouldn't have to go through all the pages.
Okay.
If you want me to give you pages,
no,
I can
fine.
Do that too.
We're
You're not familiar
to look
with these?
With you. We were just hoping to look with you. That's
You're not familiar with these?
I've looked over them, but I don't know them offhand by heart, no.
Okay. In late 2012, the county was advised to receive a refund series 2008 standalone UPSA into the VPSA pool, resulting in over $10 million in gross savings, which I think is fantastic. This refunding reduced the county debt service by over $380,000 annually. So I was really pleased at some of the reports in that, and I don't have any problem with the contract.
Anyone else?
Do
we have a motion?
I move the Board of Supervisors approve the contract between Fluvanna County and Raymond James and Associates Incorporation to provide on-call financial advisory services as needed by the county, and further authorize the county administrator to execute the agreement subject to approval as to form by the county attorney.
Second.
Motion been made by Mrs. Booker and seconded by Mrs. Eager. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0.
Thank you.
Now we'll move to action matters at tab N, Flu Banner Rescue Building Maintenance Funding. Mr. Dahl.
Mr. Chair, members of the board, so at the previous meeting we came to you about the whole plan for the Palmyra Rescue Building. Mm-hmm. We are still going through some of the legal aspects of finishing getting the deed and the property transferred to the county. There's been no issues. The only issue that we had to just slow down was we had to get a survey ordered for the property just so we had all the correct meets and bounds and building and all that on a proper survey before we move forward. Title commitment's been ordered, and Mr. Payne's office has been working with Flu Banner Rescue Squad, Inc., with their attorney as well to get everything ready to go. What we want to do, we want to come to you to get some of the funds appropriated to start getting some building repairs finalized, coming, you know, as soon as the documents have been finalized between Palmyra Rescue and Flu Banner County. So previously we came to the board just outlining all the repairs that were needed for the rescue building, came to a total of $100,000. We had listed items that were needed immediately, items that were going to be brought to you in the FY18 CIP, and then items in the FY19 CIP. After further review of some of the items that were in the needs and maintenance and repairs for the building, staff thought it would be a better idea to do $50,000 in the immediate, and then bring another $50,000 or $50,000 plus whatever some additional costs are within the FY18 CIP.
Okay.
Originally we said $38,000 we'd need, but that didn't include some of the well work, and let's get the well work done. So I'd rather just go straight 50 now. And the reason we kind of picked that number is because in the capital reserve maintenance fund in your package, we carried over $50,000 in the capital reserve from last year to this year, carried it forward, and because it is kind of an excess bolus and it was carried forward money, it stays in the capital reserve, that would be the ideal purpose to be able to jump on this. And that way you get things fixed on the front end rather than waiting another 6 months or a year or 2 years. And the part of the churn has been about the well. So Mr. Stevens thinks he can get the majority of the big rock stuff done with that $50,000 up front rather than just do $38,000 now.
Any questions?
I move the Board of Supervisors approve an FY17 transfer of $50,000 from the Capital Reserve Maintenance Fund budget to a new FY17 capital improvements project for repairs to the Palmyra Rescue Building.
Second.
Motion's been made by Ms. Seeger, seconded by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. We'll now go to tab O, FY17 ambulance CIP funding. Mr. Dahl.
This
is what we talked about last week.
Yeah, again, I spoke to the board last week regarding an ambulance and the funds that were needed. Ms. Toller, depending upon the board's action here right now for this funding request, will be coming forward with you for a contract or two contracts for two ambulances. So really, if you look up at the screen right there or look on your monitor, as we said previously, number 45 has a damaged chassis. Number 46 was sold in fiscal year 16 for $95,46. 47 and 48, they have issues that are making them not to be reliable vehicles. We can get a trade-in through the vendor for $25,000 a piece for each vehicle. Number 49 was determined to keep, that it's in still good working order. And then within the fiscal year 17 CIP, there was funding of $245,000. Below that is the cost for purchasing, rechassing ambulance 45, and then purchasing a new ambulance to replace 47 and 48. So really, the funding shortfall is $29,000. But in addition, just because we're doing some general housekeeping, the number 46 ambulance that was sold, that goes basically into fund balance for fiscal year 16. So basically, we're adding what the shortage is, which is $29,000 plus the 9546, and that's what would be appropriated within the fiscal year 17 CIP. For the ambulances, in addition to the $245,000 that's already there. So the motion right there is for $39,000.
And that takes care of everything.
That takes care of the re-chassis of number 45 and a brand new ambulance, and then this accounts for the trade-ins of the two old ambulances as well.
How do we determine the value of those two? How did they happen to come out exactly equal to $25,000, both of them?
Well, I know Fluvanna Rescue and some of our providers, they've gone through some research trying to figure out what they could sell them for and what some ambulances have sold for in the past. What the thought process was for the 25 exactly.
That's what I was wondering. Both of them end up
standard rate from that company.
Yeah.
The company.
We're saying both of them worth the same thing.
Yeah.
I think it's very coincidental.
It wasn't because of the condition. If you trade in an ambulance, essentially it's $25,000.
No matter what condition it's
well,
in.
Well, I don't mean if it's one's burned out.
Yeah,
but I mean old versus new, it's $25,000.
It's right. What Northwestern offered us, and I believe they probably padded that up some since we are doing quite a bit of business with them. Mm-hmm. like it said, the last ambulance I sold that was running, we only got $9,000.
Yeah, that's we got the 95.
Yeah, I wondered about that. Yeah.
I can tell you, 48 hit a pine tree.
I think she should go back and
put the pine tree hit
48. Yeah. who services are ambulances?
Yeah. We are currently
getting together a contract that will come to you at the next meeting. They're going to start being serviced through a maintenance contract with Atlantic Emergency Services, who has a cooperative contract with Elisa that we're going to ride.
And that's one of the reasons why we really want to manage the vehicles and the buildings, because we do this kind of stuff for a living, and let the rescue folks focus on rescue. And mm-hmm. you know, and
good
so
idea.
Having these contracts in place will make it much easier to get the equipment maintained so they can run. Mm-hmm.
And then, like I said, if the board approves this $39,000, then Cindy will be coming right behind me to bring forward the contract for both of the ambulances.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Any other questions?
No.
Do we have a motion?
Okay, I move the Board of Supervisors approve a supplemental appropriation of $39,000 from the unassigned fund balance to the fiscal year 17 capital improvement budget for ambulance replacement.
Second. Motion is made by Mrs. Booker, excuse me. Mr. O'Brien seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. Ms. Toler, we're now with P, ambulance purchase and re-chassis.
Right. Again, we have the motions for both the re-chassis and the purchase of the new ambulances. Mm-hmm. We are working off a cooperative HGAC contract, and we have not been able to formalize the actual contract. Christina Hoffman in the county attorney's office is working on it now. She had hoped to have it today, but wasn't able to get it. So we're asking to go ahead and approve the motion so we can move forward, since it is, you know, kind of pressing. So we can go ahead and move forward, and once the contract is written and approved by the county attorney's office, that Steve could go ahead and sign them.
Mm-hmm. So just when you do the motions, please read off the screen, because I updated the motions on the screen.
Oh, okay.
Same dollars there, but just a simplified motion.
Right.
Alrighty, do I have somebody give me that first motion?
I move the Board of Supervisors approve an ambulance purchase from Northwestern Emergency Vehicles, Inc., totaling $193,603, including a credit of $25,000 for trade-in of 4th Union Unit number 47, and further authorize the County Administrator to execute the agreement subject to approval as to form by the County Attorney.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. First motion passes 5-0.
Sorry.
They got the other one.
More.
I move the Board of Supervisors approve the purchase of the re-chassis of ambulance number 45 from Northwestern Emergency Vehicles, Inc., totaling $90,261, including a credit of $25,000 for the trade-in of K-9 Kent Store, Unit Number 48, and further authorize the county administrator to execute the agreement subject to approval as to form by the county attorney.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mrs. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0, and I will add that Mr. Best is smiling in heaven because he disliked 48 and wanted to get rid of it from back the first week we had it. All righty. Now we will move on to presentations. Tab Q, TJPDC Legislative Update. Mr. Blunt.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the board.
Good afternoon, sir.
Thank you for your time this afternoon. I just wanted to speak to you briefly, as I typically do this time of year, about putting together the regional legislative program and also get some input from you into drafting that program, which I will be doing over the next several weeks. Before I did that, though, I wanted to mention the Legislative Services survey that I had sent out, I guess, back in the middle of August, and hopefully some of you all were able to reply to that. We had a very healthy response rate of about 40% on questions dealing with the process for developing the program, part of which is today, but also legislative communications during the General Assembly and throughout the rest of the year. There was a strong agreement among the respondents that this process of gathering input and putting the program together, the program's content, the structure, the length, that all of that was right on target. There was also a lot of support for the legislative updates that are provided, but I think there were a couple of very good suggestions that I'm going to implement as we head into the next session. One of those was that that we need to send out legislative updates as needed rather than on kind of a regular schedule, which I tend to look at the calendar of things that are happening in the General Assembly and send them out according to when I think there would be good times to send them out, basically. The other thing that I think is really important is there was a lot of support for sending out real-time snippets of information. I don't know what form that might take, but just, you know, letting you know when something has happened as opposed to waiting until the next newsletter. And then even perhaps more importantly, there was good feedback as to what some of these updates would look like. And rather than being a report on what has happened, there was support for telling me telling you what's pending, and then also how you could communicate with your legislators to help influence the decisions that they make. So again, I'm going to be taking that input and trying to implement some of those suggestions as we move into the next session. Mr. Nichols has up on the screen and in your packet a one-page summary of the legislative priorities that we had for the 2016 session. And as you know, we focused on public education funding as the top priority. The General Assembly did put about $850 million more into K-12 education over the course of the biennium that we're in now, fiscal year 17 and 18. For fiscal year 17, the amount got us back above, finally, the fiscal year 09 amount. Mm-hmm. So we had, you know, have seen big declines in the amount of state, and that's, I'm sorry, that's on a per pupil basis. So we've seen some big declines, as I've been talking to you about in recent years. We finally clawed our way back to where for fiscal year 17, the state funded per pupil amount for K-12 education is above where we were in fiscal year 09. You've heard about the state's budget gap that they're going to be facing here in 17 and 18. We certainly are going to want to protect that investment as well as investments in other areas where you receive funding from the state, whether it be public safety or health and human services. I think for fiscal year 17, it's going to be an easier task than in 18. As you all were talking about your salary issue, that money that was budgeted for that is going to be put towards closing the gap in 17. They probably also will be looking to tap into their rainy day fund for 17. Once you get to 18, that's where the real decisions are going to be made. They're going to be tough decisions. They're going to have to be made.
How much is in our rainy day fund now?
I want to say it's maybe $700-800 million, something like that. And there's provisions in the Constitution that stipulate not only how much the General Assembly has to put in, depending on what revenue growth they've, right. they've experienced, but also how much you can take out. There's limitations on that, on how much can be taken out in any given year. So that's kind of where we are budget-wise. I'll just mention a couple of other issues. A lot of things that are being studied this year. You heard a lot last year from me, from VACO and others about transient lodging, short-term rentals called the Airbnb legislation. The Virginia Housing Commission is taking a look at that here during the summer. They've started up their meetings and looking at all the issues related to how they would operate in Virginia, whether it's public safety issues, insurance issues, tax issues, a lot of things that, that affect local governments, you know, seeing if there's some way that you can set a framework for how those would operate in Virginia. You've talked about towers at length this evening. We had a piece of legislation this past session that was put forth by the industry that would have really put a lot of limitations on local authority to approve towers. In fact, Delegate Lee Ware, who you're going to be seeing here in a couple of weeks, is heading up the subcommittee that's taking a look at that legislation this year, so that might be a topic to ask him about.
Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, just this bill was put in by the industry. They wanted to basically to, I've characterized it as doing what they want, where they want, and without having to go through counties for approvals of infrastructure. So this is for wireless infrastructure. It's really being pushed by Verizon. They're really interested in a lot of the small cell technology and being able to, you know, to put those on existing structures. But again, I think the rub from the local government standpoint is, you know, where they want to have the local government have less say in terms of their approvals and their permitting. So I'll certainly, I can send you an update on where we are in those discussions and a link to the bill so you can see exactly what the proposal was. Just a couple of other things, again, study-wise. There's a, I believe, a two-year examination of the standards of quality that's underway. Really a lot of focus on educational technology planned for that. They've only had one meeting so far. And then there's a new group that's been set up to take a look at the Virginia retirement system. The first meeting they had was largely spent looking at employee compensation. The second meeting, they started looking at the fees that are being charged to VRS by outside fund managers. And if the 7% assumed rate of return that VRS has had on the books for several years now is where we need to be. I think the past 2 years have been the rate of return on VRS's investments have been below that. So, but those are all, you know, whether you're talking education funding, Virginia retirement system, local authority on towers, all very important issues.
Yes, sir. It seems to me that 7% was quite an optimistic figure on your returns, do you know?
Yeah, for a number of years, the rate had been set at 7.5%, and I want to say it was somewhere in the vicinity of 2010, 2012 that they backed off on that. The way VRS looks at their actuarial weight, it's actually looked at over a five-year recognition of returns. So, you know, you go through a period of years when your returns are less, but then you may have a couple of years that are thrown in there. You know, that are 10 or 11%. So they're really recognizing only 20% at any one given time of a year's return. So it's kind of a smoothing effect. But, you know, that would certainly be, you know, something that the fund managers and others, you know, would want to have a debate about. And
didn't they have a tremendous decline in their fund balance 4, 5, 6 years ago? There was a big drop in that.
They have, yes. Yes. And then the other big issue I think that I talked to you about last year was that as they look at the decline in that fund balance, they're looking at increasing obligations in the out years, and that's the unfunded liability for, you know, your teachers, your state workers, your state-supported local employees, and what it would take to pay off, you know, if everybody retired. And that's why they rely so heavily on those investment returns being up there, because they know that their outstanding liabilities are pretty hefty and only continuing to grow.
Do you know where we fall in terms of the average for unfunded liabilities per states?
I do not. I do not.
We're not Illinois.
We're not Illinois.
There was
I
a
think
figure.
We're kind of towards the better top, towards the better half of the pack, if you would.
Yeah, I'll see if I can find.
There was a figure on that, Tony. I saw it, but I forget what it was.
Top 25%.
Anyway, I know that's a lot of information in a short period of time. I really did want to get your input as to any changes or new emphasis that you would like to see in the regional program. Also, I'm interested in hearing from you as to any local initiatives or bills that you may be thinking about in terms of putting forward in the next General Assembly session. Certainly when you get together with your legislators here in a couple of weeks, those would be good things to discuss with them, and I am glad to assist through the fall and through the General Assembly session in trying to get those advanced. I am in the process now of meeting with the local governments, governing bodies in the region to have this discussion. We'll be drafting the updated legislative program here in the latter part of September, and we'll get that back out to you for your review in the first part of October, and then, as I've been doing, we'd like to come back and see you again the first part of November to get your approval of the program. So that's all I had to offer. Certainly glad to entertain more questions, comments, or suggestions.
Thank you so much for coming in.
And on behalf of the staff, we could not possibly have gotten this legislative breakfast set up without Mr. Blount's help.
Thank you so
much. Greatly appreciated. Helped coordinate with all the offices, and he has all his contacts. It's not what he normally does to help out, but we really appreciate it.
I'm glad to do it, and I'll look forward to being there with you.
Thank you. All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
Next, we will move to our 2016 Fluvanna County Fair results. Spencer.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, board members. I'm here today to talk to you about the Fluvanna County Fair that was held August 17th through the 20th, and just give you some information on what we did throughout the fair. Let's see. Which do I hit?
Just click inside the
tree. That's
a
ride.
Okay.
That was a ride. Ben walked off and got sick.
Oh, you did.
I bet it looked like you would.
My grandson got on that. He didn't like it.
There we go. Sorry. So this year we tried to take somewhat of an attendance to see where people were coming from that were outside of Fluvanna County. Most came from Fluvanna, Albemarle, Charlottesville, Gooch, and Louisa and Orange. We did have some from the Valley and Buckingham, Cumberland, Green, Rockingham, you know, around the area. And then there were some out-of-state people. Sure, they're probably visiting a family, but it's always good to know, you know, who's coming out to see our events when we do it. There we go. All right, so the next is the expenses that we accrued for Parks and Recreation side during the fair. So for advertising, we had $489.48. General supplies, we had $4,407. And contract services, we had $9,898.50. For a total of $14,794.98. The revenue we took in were gate sales, carnival rides, fair vendors. For gate sales, we had $10,073. Carnival rides, that's $50. That should be $50, not $500, for each food and concession. That was a typo, sorry. As well as 25% of all ticket sales. So that total equaled $9,484. And then vendors, fair vendors, was $1,120. For a total of $20,677. So the balance was a plus $5,882.02 for this year for the county fair. Last year's balance was $1,610.
Wow.
Just as a reference. This year on Friday, between the hours of 12 and 2, we had a special needs day. So that was for the kids in the schools. Anybody, any age could come out if they needed special assistance to get on rides. Valley Amusements opened up the rides for free for the kids. We had about 50 kids in the school system show up, along with their parents and school members to help them on and off rides. E.W. Thomas provided meals for the children as well as the carnival staff for opening up the rides at no charge. And a special thanks to Wade Parrish, Jonathan Pace with Parks and Rec, and the Fluvanna County Public Schools for offering this unique experience. We really do. Like, it's awesome that we could have something like this for our kids. We also want to thank the Fair Board and other sponsors that helped put on this event. We listed them.
And George is right there in the audience.
And then just got some pictures throughout the event. We try to take some various pictures. A little bit of everything, carnival, 4-H, the rodeo. That's the winging contest on the high school night. Those are blazing wings. So, and then a cornhole tournament on Saturday. So that was at the Pleasant Grove House. And that's my presentation. Is there any questions?
So I know last year there was maybe some tension between certain groups and the county and staff and so on. Was that any of that kind of stuff happen this year?
Not really. Not. I mean, there's always. It's stressful trying to put an event like this. So I mean, you have some, but there was not any problems that I was aware of. We have our first county fair meeting next Monday. So I'll be at that to talk to them about moving forward for next year.
You have the last county meeting and discussion about sort of some of the plans around maybe expanding the water system at Pleasant Grove. How did that go as far as getting water to the animals and staff? Is that all?
We ran water from, not the animals got like non-potable water, so we ran it from the community garden up to the 4-H tent. The carnival is able, we have a water tap right there above where we did the rodeo. Mm-hmm. It's potable water, so the carnival used that, so they have potable water. So
it wasn't very problematic then?
Not. We worked around it to make sure everybody had what they needed to move forward. Mm-hmm. So I mean, it'd be nice to have potable water everywhere, but not yet.
I know I went by the tent with a bunch of those guys, sat down and just talked to a bunch of the dads, and they were very pleased with the way everything was going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I didn't get any major complaints about it, and we tried to have a courtesy shuttle as much as possible to get elderly to the back and they could walk back to the front or from cars. I think we need to have one in the parking lot maybe next year. There's some things that we've seen.
I do have one complaint. Mr. Pace was going to give me a ride back to the Duncan booth, and somehow he disappeared on me, and the next time I saw him was when I was walking with him about 50 feet of the Duncan booth, and he was riding by waving.
Hey, he did that to me too, so don't feel bad. He left me walking, so it wasn't just you.
No, this is not when I was leaving. This is when I'm
when you're coming in.
That's okay. I left him hanging. Believe it or not, I started talking.
So much. Not a fun.
Enough of that. All right. Thank you.
Another question. Thank you.
Job well done.
Thank you. Have a good night.
Well, you had good weather too.
Absolutely.
One night. Beautiful.
I believe it was while we were in session.
We were here.
I ran
outside to tell the
show down. It's never a good thing when you got that going on. You hear kaboom. And everything starts shaking. All righty. Next, we will move on to the consent agenda.
I just request you to defer tab T.
Defer tab T.
You are, yeah. I already sent in some corrections on it, so you already have it. They weren't anything of any great consequence.
I got one.
Yeah, Ms. Harris made some corrections in the minutes just updated, but also the Walmart one that you questioned, that was just an incorrect word in there. You can see on the screen there, the state name was taken out. It's not a state grant. That's the question I had.
Why would it not have been a Walmart grant or whatever, not a state grant?
It was language copied from another.
Well, that's fine.
Sheriff's Office.
Might as well have a crack.
Yep.
Okay, Mr. Weaver, are there any items that need to be pulled from the consent agenda?
No, Kelly took care of it.
Yes. All right, hearing none, is there a motion to approve the consent agenda?
So moved.
Okay.
Do I have a second? Motion made by Ms. Eager, seconded by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. All righty. Unfinished business. Land use program policies and procedures, Mr. Nichols.
Board has been talking about this for a number of months and had requested the backup information sort. I put the information together that you've had for the last few meetings. I've got those linked up. I've got Mr. O'Brien's requests and questions linked up. And we've got two motions, one to reaffirm existing policies and procedures, which is not required,
You wouldn't have to do that. It just it may be a validation for the public, or any modifications you want to make to the current land use program policies, ordinances, policies, or procedures.
So all right. Do we have any questions?
I move to affirm.
And well, I'm sorry, I do have some questions. In fact, I have 17 or 18 questions I put to the Commissioner of Revenue.
The motion today.
Motion takes precedent. That comes first.
But I think we have discussion first.
Well, we can have a discussion after the motion. Ms. Eager?
I move to reaffirm and retain current Fluvanna County Land Use Program ordinances, policies, and procedures.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay. Now, Mr. O'Brien.
Yeah, so I think this should be tabled. I've placed 17 questions to the Commissioner of Revenue. I've not heard a response back from him. I don't think we have the appropriate information from the Commissioner of Revenue as to where we stand on land use. There are, in my opinion, some pretty clear examples of where we are essentially doing the absolute minimum when it comes to compliance, and that in the compliance itself, there's great misunderstanding on the public side. Several other county websites, if you read my email, make it pretty clear that revenue requirements as are a part of the land use program. A minimum of $1,000 per 5 acres is required, with typically after that a minimum of half the yield of the county average. If you look at all the documentation, if you look at how the land use program is implemented, it is very clear that it is intended to be something that is promoting agriculture, horticultural, or forestry. Now, the way that it's implemented in our county, we don't even advertise the fact that those are requirements for the person applying for those programs. There's almost $2 million that's given up in terms of revenues for land use programs. Without a proper compliance, we certainly could be losing $200,000, $300,000, $400,000. I think when we scrutinize routinely expenditures, such as the expenditure today for $28,000, such as expenditures that Mr. Weaver will scrutinize on a regular basis when we're looking at the budget, it is a disservice to the county residents to not scrutinize the compliance component of the land use program. I think that the county should have a compliance audit that is performed by a third-party source, and I also think that it behooves the Board of Supervisors to do that, because we have some transparency issues, at the very least, with this. We probably have several board members who, if they were trying to meet the spirit of the law and as requested by that, would not be able to meet that. We have other board members that, in my opinion, have a pretty clear conflict of interest. And so to have an independent audit done of compliance is the very minimum this board should be doing if it is serious about enforcing the laws of Virginia, which is part of our duties. So I'd like to see the Commissioner of Revenue answer some of those questions so that we can have a more thoughtful and complete discussion about this. I'd like to see this not being brushed under the rug. And I do think that several of you are certainly in putting yourself in a bad position by voting on this. My personal opinion, I don't understand how we are turning a blind eye to a program that is benefiting 30% of the population and not benefiting 70% of the population. This is not about taking away land use program. I'm in favor of the land use program, but it is about having people that are participating in the land use program do so as it is intended. And I don't see that that is happening. Most people that I've talked to about the land use program are totally unaware of the real requirements of the program. That's a lot of people. And I know people that are benefiting from it. And again, I would ask that if you can't, honestly, if you read the emails, and I don't know if you read the email, if you don't, I'm happy to go through it. But when it says, submit a Schedule F, when it says, show receipts of $1,000, when it says, average of 3 years for those $1,000, when it says, show farm income, when we have the Commissioner of Revenue tell us that he isn't going to look at somebody's returns for that, he's not going to bother an 80-year-old lady to do that, he's told us right there he's not doing that. When we have Mr. Snooty, who comes through and tells us that, I cut grass for Snotty, I cut grass for however many people into hay, but I never get a receipt from them. You've had example after example of compliance violations to the law, and you can turn a blind eye to it, but you're doing a disservice to this county, and you're doing a disservice to the majority of the residents of this county. So I think the very minimum this board should do is to hire a firm like the TJPDC to perform an audit so that we can make decisions as to what would be the next step. And that next step would probably just inform the public that this is a requirement. The public then can make a decision. It's a simple decision. You can either go into land use as an agricultural person, fantastic, meet the requirements for agriculture. You can go into forestal if you qualify, or you can go into open space. You will have people that choose to move out of the program because they don't want to go through the hassle. Fine, that's their decision. Make that their decision. You will have people that move into more productive agriculture because they are now required to do that in order to meet those components. And you will have some people that move into open space. Regardless, the choice is up to the end, up to the citizen themselves as to how they want to do it. But we have a responsibility to make sure that we are looking at the program overall and making sure that it's being complied to. I believe that's our responsibility. The fact that the Commissioner of Revenue takes the most minimal respect and aspect in terms of compliance, which is not in line with many of the other county websites which specifically state these requirements, again, is something that we should address as well. So I'm happy to defer this and have further conversation. I'm happy to have the conversation right now. But I will say that I'm a little surprised that board members are trying to brush this under the rug as quickly as they are, without any questions.
We have a question before. Yes, ma'am.
I think we have talked about this. We had our work session on it.
Yes, ma'am.
But we still, I feel personally that we didn't have a real healthy conversation, and I think that we need to have that done. We need to have a good conversation, and and if it takes an audit to find out that we are doing, it can't do any harm to us, rather no more than just reaffirming that what we are doing, we're doing the right thing according to the law. Or maybe there are some people who are not. I may be one of those people. So I don't, we're not, and most people have called me and they're saying, you're trying to take land use away. Or you're saying that people in the county are cheating the county. I didn't hear that. And I think that we have tried to make it very clear that we want land use. Our county want this county to be rural. They do not want us to sell the property and have little places all over, sprawls all over the county. I think we have the right goal, all of us, but we need to look at how we're getting there. I know many years ago, I don't know if it's Albemarle or one of those counties when I was in Charlottesville, they used to put in their budget how much land use cost so that people will say, I know that I am paying for my county to stay rural. My taxes may go up. Maybe a half a penny is going so that these people will have land, will keep them in open space, so they will farm, we'll keep our farms here. I don't think that is anything that we shouldn't look at. I don't have any problem at us really taking a deep look at it and get somebody else to come in here, and then we can know that everybody knows that we're doing the right thing for the right reasons.
And the TJPDC can perform that kind of an audit. I have checked with them. This is not a very complicated thing, and I would say that if you know for a fact that you yourself are not in compliance right now, based on the requirements of those forms, you have a responsibility, just for transparency, to recuse yourself from this vote. I mean, I think it's flat and simple from that standpoint. How can you take a vote on something that you have a personal interest in and that you know you're not compliant with? And so the only thing that we would do right now is to hire a firm to tell us whether we're doing it right or wrong. That's the only thing we would do. And I don't know how the board can vote against that.
Ms. Avery.
I was just going to ask Tony if what he just said, do you know or do you feel that anybody on this board is out of compliance?
Yep, simple question. Have you produced $1,000 of sales and gross receipts averaging for the last 3 years?
Yes, sir.
And I'm not saying you are, okay? I'm not saying you are. I'm saying if you can't, then you should recuse yourself.
I can.
Right? If you can. And I've actually never questioned the fact that
you
are probably compliant.
Tony, I'd like to also tell you, although okay. I'm not going to I'm not required to show my tax returns any more than Mr. Trump is. I have filed a Schedule F for 32 years, every single year.
I honestly believe that you were probably the one person on this board that was absolutely compliant with it. I do believe that. But I don't believe that Mr. Weaver's compliant. I don't believe that the chair is compliant. And she's strictly enforceable use, so it's hard for me to say that. But if you're claiming agricultural production and you're not producing agricultural, you're not in compliance. And that's a simple thing right there.
I think
the chair has a conflict of interest because his brother's the commissioner of revenue, and so he should recuse himself from that.
Tony, we had we called in people throughout the state to come and educate us and talk to us, and I think that we've done due diligence.
No, we haven't.
We've had the public. Has had the opportunity to come in and speak to us?
The Commissioner of Revenue hasn't answered 17 questions like this to him.
Well,
they're pretty detailed questions. I'll read the questions out. I'll read the questions out for the public because I don't think that we can say that we've done our due diligence when we don't have the answers from the Commissioner of Revenue. I don't think that when we clearly have people that, if they were asked straight outright, are you in compliance?
Yes, I do a Schedule F.
Do you do a Schedule F? Have you had growth receipts of $1,000?
I put $1,000 into my grapes.
No, gross
you don't
receipts.
Have, you don't gross have receipts. Receipts to begin with.
Gross though. Receipts of
I've $1,000. Been investigated by newspapers, and they came back and said that I'm in compliance. I talked to Mr. Thompson last week. He said if you spend $1,000, you're in compliance.
I believe it was gross receipts.
If you spend $1,000, Mr. O'Brien, I'm not going to argue the fact with you. We can argue another fact about one of us that's not complying to the rules later.
Go ahead. What am I not complying with?
We're talking about land use right now.
We have a motion on the floor.
And again, I believe that you have a conflict of interest just because your brother's on the board. You've recused yourself for far less. Okay. All right, and each of you has a financial interest in this, okay? And just on that financial interest alone, you should, for transparency purposes, look to have a compliance audit done.
Mr. Chairman, can I comment on that?
Yes, sir.
It's a legal issue. First of all, the fact that the chairman's brother is the commissioner of revenue doesn't constitute a conflict of interest.
Yes, sir.
I know of my own knowledge that they are not residents of the same household. So whether anybody thinks that that's something that should be done, in my opinion, it's not legally required. With respect to the other issue, this is a matter of general application because it applies to the entire county. And the fact that a member participates in a program that relates to the entire county as a matter of general application does not constitute a conflict of interest, except to the extent that he has a peculiar interest that's beyond what the matter of general application. I don't see that in this case, so I don't think it's a conflict of interest. It's a matter of whether or not to do this is up to the board, but to say that in this case, four members of the board would have to disqualify themselves from participating because they're on this issue, because they're participating in the program. In my opinion, that is not a correct application of the Conflict of Interest Act.
And I believe what I said was the chair should recuse himself because of his brother. You've made that point clear. I will point out that I've been on other boards where people simply recuse themselves just to avoid any potential.
Mr. O'Brien, I said that if someone thinks that as a matter of, phrase it however you want, morals, ethics,
sure,
appearance, Caesar's wife, however you want to phrase that, then you have, a member has a right not to participate. However, weighed against that, every time a member declines to participate in a matter, there's a possibility that he's simply not doing his job. Now, the members, including you, Mr. O'Brien, have a right to say, I don't feel morally correct in participating in this matter. They certainly do have a right to do that. I'm not addressing that.
I understand.
I'm addressing the legal issue.
I understand that.
And I don't see the legal issue as a conflict of interest.
I understand that as well, too.
Either basis.
I do believe it is a moral issue, though.
Can I call for the question?
Okay, we have a motion. It's been made by Mrs. Eager, seconded by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Motion passes 3-2.
You pass.
Mr. Nichols, just under unfinished business, I had asked you a question last time, and you told me that the Lake Monticello Board was going to come back with us after their meeting.
Sorry, I have not gotten a response from them on
the August 25th meeting
about the boat issue. I'll follow up.
Thank you very much, sir.
I did put them on hold on the tower issue because we're pursuing the
CVAC option. Thank you, sir. All righty. So that will move from unfinished business. Is there any new business? There's no new business.
So I'd like to make a motion that we put on our website the actual requirements of the land use program as is listed per other counties, so that the county, so the public is informed of their actual requirements.
That's not on the agenda.
No, it's new business.
Yeah, but you did. You,
I'm listening to that.
You want to do that? Put it on then the next.
Okay.
And make it an agenda business.
Then I'd like to ask the county staff to look at samples of what other people advertise for their land use program, other counties in Virginia advertise for their land use program, so that we have a template that is more in line with the actual laws, as opposed to a template that is very generic and that does not inform the public of their requirements.
Mr. Chairman, I think that motion is out of order.
Thank you, sir.
Why is it out of order?
Because it's already been decided.
No, we decided that the rules and the procedures were like this is with regard to the website and informing the public.
Mr. Payne, you're our legal expert. Do you think it's out of order?
I think it's out of order.
Thank you, sir.
It's up to the chairman to rule on.
I will rule that it is out of order.
How is it out of order?
Because the matter was just decided on that vote.
The matter was that the procedures and the policy.
Mr. O'Brien, I understand what you're doing.
So you're arguing that we shouldn't be transparent with the public?
Mr. O'Brien, I'm not arguing anything. It's not up to me to decide this one way or the other. The issue for me is the procedural one. You have just spent 15 minutes discussing whether or not to continue to discuss this, and the board ruled against
it. So let me ask another question then. How does the county currently make decisions about the content of the website? We are in the process of reviewing our website content right now. How does the county do that? Okay. Pretty straightforward question, has nothing to do with this. We're reviewing the content of our website to put it out to the public. This is content and this is the law. I don't think it has anything to do with the policies and procedures. I think you have lots of examples of other counties that are putting out there exactly what the requirements are. And I don't think that that's a far stretch for this county to comply from that standpoint.
Mr. Chairman, you've heard my opinion.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much.
I'd like to continue on with the agenda.
Yes, sir.
How is the content decided? It's a simple question.
The county staff does not decide or determine content for constitutional officer web pages.
Okay, thank you.
All righty.
We haven't in the 5 years I've been here.
We will now move to our second round of public comment. Anyone wishing to address the board should come to the podium and state your name and address. Please remember to keep your comments to 5 minutes on topic and direct it to the board. Anyone wishing to speak to address the board at this time? Mr. Goin? Okay. Seeing no one wishing to speak, we'll close the second round of public comment. Do we have closed session, Mr. Weaver?
No.
No. All righty. Having no closed session, is anything
move to
else?
Adjourn. If there's no other
I have a motion to adjourn. Do I have a second?
Second.
Motion been made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Mrs. Seeger. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. Thank you very much, folks. Oh, shoot. Mr. Payne, can I read this note? We received a note from Mr. Garcia. Never mind.
Yes, I think you can.
He just sent a note to us saying thank you for the award that he received. It meant a lot to him. I mean, I could sit here and read it, but he wanted to make sure that he sent a note, a thank you note to us, and that, you know, it's well deserved.
And appreciation to the community members who made the nomination.
Well, well, well.